Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Comedy Castle podcast. I'm your host, Joel Fragamini. I'm going to tell you what's going on this week at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. It's kind of a special show here this week as Tim Finkel will be joining me. Tim's not on the lineup this week. He was scheduled to be on the lineup last week, and that didn't happen. And Tim will explain why. It's also John Heffron week, which is always fun on this show and at the club. Going to play an older interview with John after we hear from Tim. Anyway, let's get into what's going on this week. Let's tell you all the shows at the club, and then we'll circle back to our interviews this week. Again, a special show, a little different, but I think you guys will enjoy it. I think you'll be moved, if not entertained, and special. We'll leave it at that. All right, so this week it is November 12th on Wednesday night, and we've got open mic night, the first open mic, I believe, in 6 weeks or 7 weeks, something like that. That's November the 12th, 7:30 p.m. We got a great lineup of some of the best younger comedians, newer comedians. They can be of any age, but they're new to comedy. A couple of veterans mixed in there to keep it interesting. It's open mic night. It's 7:30 p.m. It's $5 at the door, so come on out. Is it $6 at the door? What is it? It's $5 at the door. Of course it is. It's been so long. I thought maybe it changed. It did not. Open mic night, 7:30 on Wednesday the 12th. And then John Heffron returns to our great club here at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday the 13th. Friday, 7:15 and 9:45. That's November 14th. And November 15th, 7 and 9:30 with John. One of the things you're going to hear in our interview here is should this be John Heffron week every year? Should it just be called that? Early November. I think the dogs have an opinion. What are we barking at today, guys? Come on over here. Usually they're pretty good during the show. They kind of sit here. Their daddy works. You guys good? Okay. You want to sit on my lap, little one? I think the little one, Cleo, wants to sit with me while I talk. That's okay. We can get this done. But John Heffron this weekend, and then we got a great Sunday show with Christopher Titus. He's returning back to our club 7:30 p.m. on Sunday the 16th. I believe that show is very nearly sold out, if not completely sold out. Again, check comedycastle.com. Click on that map. There might be a ticket or two that opens up for Christopher Titus. So come on out and see him. When he was big on his Fox sitcom in the late 90s and early 2000s, when that show was real hot, Christopher would come in and sell out almost every show he did. And for a while, he wasn't touring, wasn't appearing at the Comedy Castle anyway, but he's been back the last couple of years, always does a great job. It's always entertaining to have Christopher Titus there. 7:30 p.m., Sunday, November 16th, for Christopher Titus. And those will be our shows this week. Fun shows. Fun show. Should be good. I always love seeing open mic night. Had my students do their graduation showcase last week. That was a fun night. I hope you guys, well, that was November 4th. I've already talked about that, haven't I? I haven't talked about it. Last week, November 4th, fun night. Good times. Thank you. We'll have a new one starting up soon. I'm trying to confirm dates. I've picked dates for the advanced comedy class in 2025. And anyway, we're going to get into that as it gets closer, okay? But just know comedy classes will be starting up in 2026. Call the club or check comedycastle.com. They'll have a link to it and call the club at 248-542-9900. 248-542-9900 to sign up for any of the comedy classes. I think the dogs have broken my rhythm here. I don't have eyes on the little one, but Mr. Baxter's here hanging out, and he looks good. She's torturing him. That's how this dog stuff works. The little one tortures the big one, and then the big one has to get loud and angry to say, leave me the hell alone. It never ends around here, but I love him. If you got him, you love him too. All right, Tim Finkel is going to be the first guest you hear today. And Tim, of course, tragically, we've covered the story of Ryder Finkel and his illness. And Tim's way of dealing with it, the way the Detroit comedy community has rallied around Tim and his family. And unfortunately, Ryder's journey came to an end. Tim wanted to talk He wanted to talk, I think, to anybody and had some perspective on the whole thing. And he'll give us his updates in this interview. He wants to talk about the humor of Ryder. It never left him. And he had it right up towards the end. And what a brave kid he was, how he outlived his diagnosis. Tim is going to be returning to comedy. He was supposed to be on the shows with Keith Albrechtstadt last week, and he had to bow out of those for obvious reasons. And he has some headline dates coming up in 2026 at our club, so he'll tell you about that. He'll tell you also about Ryder's Memorial Service and how you can join if you want to be a part of that. I cried. Before I'm starting to well up now. Before we started the interview, we were talking, me and Tim, and I said, you know, you got to give me 2 minutes to go get some tissues. And I sobbed through this whole thing, and you may too. But we've covered Tim's, Ryder's whole journey, and what a brave kid with a great sense of humor. And we just talk about it all in this interview. I don't want to get it's all going to come out in the interview here. As far as the John Heffron interview, just stay tuned. It'll be right after that. This is an interview from 2023 that I did with John. He's moving this week. Wasn't able to sit down and have a talk with John. But it's a great interview from 2023. I talked to him about on this one. Should it be John Heffron weekend? I brought in that. We talk about the state of comedy specials. This is in 2023. Maybe it's changed since then. He'll tell you about the mall. John loved the mall. I guess he still does. We'll hear about that. We'll talk about Halloween as well, because I guess that had just passed when we did this interview back in 23. But it's always fun. I love John. He's got one of the great acts out there. He's been doing it for decades now, and people love him. So it's going to be a little sad here with Tim, and the only way it could be. But we try to have some laughs. Well, yeah, Tim was actually going to tell us about the showcase with the students. That's the thing. We did that as well. Yeah, that's what we did. We started that way, and then it gets sad. So a little laughter, then a little sadness, and then we'll bring it back with John Heffron, some laughter. Those interviews are just going to go directly from one to the other here. So I'll be back after those real briefly. But here's Tim Finkel, everybody. Enjoy this. All right, ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line, it's a pleasure, even though under certain circumstances, it's always a pleasure to talk to Tim Finkel. Tim, welcome back to the Comedy Castle podcast.
Thank you, Joel. Thanks for meeting with me today. And certainly not the circumstances I would like, but nonetheless, very grateful for it.
Yeah. But I also was delightedly surprised when you appeared at the Advanced Comedy Class Showcase on Tuesday night. I want to thank you for coming out and supporting those guys.
Yeah, that was great. I'm kind of making it a point moving forward here to just to get out and be around comedy as much as I possibly can. And I think like a little unkept secret in comedy is that those who are coming up and maybe newer to it and chasing those early on goals are just important to getting inspired as watching a seasoned headliner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a fun night Tuesday. I thought those guys they were all entertaining, even if some of them weren't what you'd call
some of it was intentional, some of it was unintentional, which sometimes that's the best comedy anyway.
Yeah, it was a fun night, and I did a little set too, and had to show love to Dylan Farr. I thought that was important because he's a guy that
That was touching when he did. I was a teacher for 21 years, and that moment, for those who are listening who maybe weren't there, Joel brought out one of his students and just kind of talked about how far he's come and what that's meant to him. Mm-hmm. And for me, like looking at you from the lens of an educator, that was touching because it kind of showed me that class means a little more to you than just teaching dick and fart jokes and how to make money out of it.
Yeah, Dylan's a guy that, you know, comedy has really helped his life. He's autistic. For those you don't know, Dylan Farr, the autistic Spitfire. You know, comedy's really given him an identity and I think a kind of a purpose in life that maybe he didn't have previous. And just self-improvement stuff. And I talked about, you know, his weight loss. He feels better about himself. He's, you know, just really enjoying comedy. And he had asked me to do an appearance on this show 3-4 months earlier, something to that. Yeah. Like it was like, you know, I literally, the class hadn't even started yet. And he's like, I need to be on your next showcase. I need to be on your next. And, you know, if you're a former student, I'll have former students guest. So that was his role on this night. And so it meant a lot to him. You know, yeah, that night was important to him. So it was like, let's make it a little extra special. I introduced him as, because he had already gone up, for those who weren't there. And I said, you know, it was election night. So I said, I want to thank you for coming out on election night. I have the results of the election. The new mayor of Detroit is the autistic Spitfire, Dylan Farr. Yeah. Came out. I had his.
Yeah, no, that was a beautiful thing. It was good to see you perform, too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I leaned over. I was sitting next to Billy Reno. I leaned over and I'm like, I don't think I've seen Joel on stage in 5 or 6 years. So it was good.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I do stuff with the students. I do the showcase here and there. And if somebody makes me an offer that's good enough, I'll do that gig, too. But I don't, you know, I was really performing for my wife's people. My wife had the people out that night to support me, which always feels nice. So.
I heard them laughing. It was good. It seemed like real laughs too, not pity laughs. So that's good.
Doesn't, you know what, Tim, though? Here's the thing. Doesn't matter to me if they're pity laughs. I'll take them. Laugh for any reason. Feel bad for me. There's no reason for people to feel bad for me. I got a great life teaching comedy. I think it's amazing. And I'm so happy to do it. And it's always a pleasure, even though it's hard work. It's still fun.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's get into what you last week on Facebook. Actually, it was earlier this week, I guess, as we're saying this. You put out that you wanted to do a podcast. And for those of you that don't know, I'll let you update that people probably know and what's occurred with Ryder and everything since we last spoke. But
Yeah. I mean, you know, Ryder's story, my son's story, hasn't been a stranger to this podcast. I appreciated you early on 2 years ago, shortly after he was diagnosed, saying a piece on that. And then in January, before I headlined there, we spoke at length about that. And unfortunately, 2 weeks ago, my son died. And, you know, it's something that we knew was going to be the inevitable outcome with his diagnosis. There's a 0% chance of survival. Yeah. We were fortunate enough that he outlived his prognosis by over double what they projected initially. And in that amount of time, in that last 2 years, I think we kind of lived and laughed and experienced life in general more deeply than I ever have in my entire life. And I learned a lot from it. And it's cliche to say when people say, like, you know, you learn more from your kids than you teach them. But I truly did learn more from my son than I will ever teach him. And we really, you know, we followed his lead for the last 2 years from everything, from his interests to his treatment decisions. You know, after about 9 months, we gave him kind of full autonomy on what he wanted to pursue treatment wise. And you know, even though he's not here any longer, I intend to continue to follow his lead because he was just a kid that had this innate wisdom that was, you know, well beyond his years. I'm incredibly grateful for the time I had with him.
Yeah. I mean, it's the words can't express, you know, how sad everyone feels and how you must be feeling right now. But that 2 year period just is so extraordinary, Tim. I don't know if, You see it from inside. Hopefully you're starting to get some that perspective, that the life that you gave him in those 2 years and the support that he had from everybody and just him leading with that attitude and his humor, which I know you want to talk about writers' sense of humor here. That's really extraordinary. And you know, as rare as that disease is and how devastating it is, the approach to it by him and your family is nothing sort of extraordinary. It's every bit as extraordinary and rare, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I've done in my life that I'm particularly proud of. But, without a shadow of a doubt, the last 2 years, I can say for both my wife and I are and my son, who's still living, I can honestly say that's the most proud I've been of anything I've ever done in my life.
Yeah. In the comedy parlance, you hit it out of the park. It was, you couldn't have done more, Tim.
Yeah. Thank you. You speak about just the rarity of it. Coincidentally, 4 weeks ago, there was a little boy that lives just 5 miles from us who actually used to ride on the same mountain bike team as my son, who was diagnosed as well with the same diagnosis, same genetic mutation and all of that. And my entire family kind of feels like we have this entire debt to repay, just our entire community for the rest of our lives for the support that we received. And so I was taking a shower the other day, and where most of my ideas come, and I had an idea to put together a comedy benefit for this family. And so, yeah, we've organized all of that. We're doing that on January 15th. And I look forward to, using comedy as a tool to help support other families, just as we were.
Yeah, that's so. I mean, and this disease that Ryder is suffering. How rare is this then for another kid that is nearby to get? I mean, it's
There's about generally about 300 cases in the U.S. per year. It's a form of brain cancer, but it takes place only in your brain stem, which regulates all of your motor function. So it didn't impact him, cognitively. He even the day he died, he was still smarter than all of us. Mm-hmm. And it just over time, it slowly takes away all of your motor function till the point where the last thing it takes away is your ability to breathe. And it's a lot like watching your child drown in slow motion. And as painful as it was, my fear was always that Ryder would lose his spirit before he died, and he would lose who he was. And that was not the case at all. He would always say that, my cancer's taken so much from me, but the one thing I'll never let it take is my ability to laugh. And he was able to laugh at others and laugh at himself. His last MRI, which was just at the beginning of October, he was starting to, even lose like bladder function and things like that. And he was too weak to squeeze the little ball if you needed help while you're in the MRI machine. So we used to have to set up like a little mirror so I could see his eyes and he could communicate with me that way. And as soon as we got in the MRI, he started blinking. So I jumped up, I let the people know we got to stop. They said, we got about 2 more minutes to finish this image. Let's just do that. So anyway, they ran in the room and Ryder had to pee, but it was too late. And so he was like, let's just get it over with. But testament to his humor, like when we finished, the first thing he said, he still had the ability to talk at that point. The first thing he said is he quoted Billy Madison while he's laying there on the bed. And he goes, of course I peed my pants. Everybody my age pees their pants. It's the coolest.
Oh, my God.
And, just the ability to, I mean, I think if I was in that situation, I would have not nearly been as pleasant to be around as my son was.
Yeah. My wife told me, you know, I had some abdominal surgeries a few years back and kind of still dealing with that on some level. But my wife told me I was miserable to be around. Yeah. I was told flat out that this is no fun. You are not fun to be around right now. So,
yeah. And yeah. I mean, he never he would have he'd lost his ability to walk and he was upset about it, but you'd watch him like meet that with acceptance. And then he'd like figure out a plan of how he can combat this and like fight it. And he actually 24 hours before he died, he insisted on going to physical therapy. Cause he had watched, the Monday Night Lions game a couple of weeks ago, and he was just inspired by that effort. Yeah. And he's like, you know, I'm still going to make it out there. And he was definitely a tenacious little guy.
Yeah, it's and he's an inspiration to everyone. And I know I put on Facebook, you saw it when when he signed the wall backstage at the Comedy Castle. And I took an extra minute to look at that, you know, when I found out the news. And
I appreciate that. Yeah, that's such a special thing to just have back there now. And, every time I'm there now, I go and look at it and draw my own inspiration from it.
No, it's the best thing on the wall for sure.
Yeah. that's big to say, because there's like Norm McDonald's on that wall.
Yeah, Norm, the thing that Norm wrote is great, and probably more than anything else, that's the one people gravitate to, which I'm proud to say I held the chair that he stood on to write that. But anyway,
that's awesome.
But here's the thing. You think a wall that only comedians and writer, of course, have signed for the last 15 or 20 years, would be funnier.
Yeah.
You know, I spend so much time in that hallway and I go, you know, these jokes don't land here. I know people, I think you got to get one good wall signature and then just use that everywhere.
Sure.
Comics don't have that yet. You get that. You try to be spontaneous and then years later you look at this and go, this is not good.
Yeah, no one wants to look at sincerity or anything like that, or the deeper meaning of all of this. They just want the clown to dance.
And sometimes it's really like ass-kissy, Mark Ridley stuff.
Sure.
And it's like, this person hasn't worked here in 15 years. What happened? Yeah. It did not work. Your false gratitude. But, I know the memorial's coming up. You want to tell people about that and how they could... be part of that?
We have a memorial on November 23rd. That's at St. Peter Macomb Lutheran Church in Macomb at 24 and Romeo Plank. That only holds 1,000, and that will be standing room only. And then we have a celebration of life afterward at, I'm just going to say, like an undisclosed location. That only holds about 490, and my wife has an entire enormous family. I do as well, and our network just runs pretty deep. That as much as we'd, I thought about doing it like straight up Charlie Kirk style at like Ford Field with like pyrotechnics and everything, but and hidden agendas. But we just decided to have it, there. So.
Well, listen, I know the turnout's going to be amazing, and we all care so much about you, your family, and Ryder, just such an inspiration to everybody, and the way he dealt with, a child being put in those situations, it's unfathomable. It's so...
I'll forever be inspired by him, I'll follow his lead.
Yes. Yeah, and that, of course, going back into stand-up comedy for you. You want to announce that? You go ahead and announce, Tim.
Yeah, yeah. So,
come on. Big news.
A couple weeks ago, I committed to headlining the Castle again from August 13th to 15th this summer, which is kind of this like perfect time frame to get my feet back underneath me and to really kind of build something new and more meaningful for me, which I kind of already started doing. The last like 2 years, I have about 30 minutes on cancer that I've written. And really, I always say, like, distilled down, you know, comedy is making a connection with people. And it became like a new way for me to do comedy. And what I learned is it was like peeling back this layer of what I had to offer, and it really started resonating with people. And I kind of feel like the last 10 years I've done comedy have just been like this like incubation period where I'm just acquiring the skills enough to finally get to the point where I can talk about what I want to talk about and do that in a way that is very funny and also very hopeful for people and connects to people. And, you know, I'm kind of getting away from really worrying about like laughs per minute and all that, and just focusing more on taking everybody for a ride. And, as the great Norm Stoltz used to say, setting them down gently after an hour, and, you know, maybe taking them out of their world or bringing my world into theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, and I know that we talked before we started here, this I know this period in your life reminding you of why you started stand-up comedy.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I like you know, I had always worshipped, adored comedy, but I didn't really ever take that first step until my brother unexpectedly passed away on my 30th birthday 17 years ago. And actually, it was my wife who kind of forced me to take that first step. And I don't know, it kind of feels like cosmic full circle here again, that like all of these experiences and what I've done have kind of led up to this moment. And I have this opportunity to you know, honor my son moving forward and do that on stage, because I'm unemployed right now. I quit my job over a year ago to focus on my son's treatment, and I have this unique moment in time where, you know, I'm just going to do creative things until I can't pay the bills any longer and see where that takes me.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's, I mean, your act, I mean, based upon what you did when you did January, right, back at the club.
Yeah, yeah.
That was an amazing night.
Yeah,
thank you.
That was an
amazing night. And I don't know how you're, you know, I'm not giving you advice or telling you what to do, but, you know, that inspirational side of what you're doing in comedy is just amazing. But, you know, you don't have to do that either. You can just be funny. You can mix it up. You do a little of the, you know.
Oh, sure. Because, yeah, yeah. I'm not, yeah. You know, I'm not looking for a filet mignon for every meal. I still very much enjoy fast food. Yeah. So,
yeah, just listen.
At this very moment in time to like move forward. And I, you know, I talked with other comic friends the last year here where I'm like, it almost feels like a comedy cheat code talking about this stuff on stage, but it's impossible for me to go up on stage and not talk about the thing that is on my mind 100% of the time.
Yeah. 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 It's such a, it's being an all consuming thing for you, that the fact that you were even able to do those shows. And, you know, the January one was just amazing. But I'm looking forward to hearing you, talk about dancing at the supermarket. I'm into that.
Yeah.
I will enjoy that bit way more the next time I hear it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
But yeah, Tim, well, listen, what a nice talk here. And again, just extending my condolences to you, your family, from myself, my wife, Layla, who I know you got to meet the other night. And
yeah, she was great. Yeah. Congrats. I don't know how you pulled that off, but good job.
I don't know either. But, you know, hey, listen, she helps me. She inspires me, you know, and
yeah,
I mean, listen, you know you married the right one when she brings people to your comedy show.
Yeah.
I mean, that's yeah. What better sign that I picked a good one when she's like, you got to come see my husband do comedy.
Yeah, my wife is absolutely phenomenal, and I know I married the right one, but based on that metric, I might have to reevaluate that. Well,
we all have our own metrics, I guess, yeah. That we have there. Layla's good at other things, too, but hey, you can support my comedy. That's nice. That's good. But yeah, man, so... I don't know how to end this, Tim, but you're an extraordinary dude, and you're a great comedian, and you're a better human being, and our thoughts with you and your family at this time, and you know, we'll be here for you when you're ready to hit that stage. The Castle's going to have you in August, but I have a feeling we might see you here and there before that. So
yeah, I plan on getting. I feel like I have lost time to make up, and you know, the few times I got to get out of the house here over the last few months and get out to comedy, it was like a nice little reminder that, you know, I belong to this culture, and I appreciate the door staying open. And I appreciate, you know, the Castle where everything started for me, and we'll continue.
Yeah. All right, Tim, we're going to let you go. But again, we'll, see you writers, you know, the memorial, and that, and people can find more information about that, right? If they want.
Yeah, if you just go to like my Facebook or Instagram, I have the there's the obituary on there that has information for it.
Yeah, maybe I'll put a link on comedycastlepodcast.com as well. As
there you go.
This show, send yourself over there to get that. But thanks again, Tim, and again, just thoughts are with you.
Thank you, Joel, for all you do. Appreciate it.
We got to go. All right. I'm crying. Let's go.
Yeah.
Take care, Tim.
All right. We'll talk to you, Joel.
All right, man.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line, I've got John Heffron, who's here this weekend. John, how are you today?
Woo! Clap, clap, clap. Yeah. I'm doing wonderful, my fine friend. How are you? How was your life? You probably do a lot of these podcasts, and you're always asking people, how are they doing? But has anyone asked you, how are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, it happens. People that listen every week were concerned about my health because I had to miss some of these shows over the summer. But my health is getting there, so I'm all right.
What was going on with your health?
I had to have two surgeries and two hospital stays.
Ugh.
Yeah.
What type of surgeries?
I don't want to get into it for maybe for potential legal reasons, but
you're transitioning. Transitioning. And you're sick of people calling you sir.
Well, I don't know.
Something like that.
Let's go with that. That's a funnier answer than what I have. Okay. But yeah, let's say safe to say that I'm doing okay. But it's been a while since we've seen each other because you haven't been at the club since I can't remember when. But here's what I remember about you and coming to the club in the recent times, and maybe I'm off by an appearance or two. I think you did the bookends of COVID with us. Meaning you were there the week before we shut down or something, then you came back, then we shut down again, and then you came back again. Does that sound right?
That sounds right. I'm trying to think of when I was there last time, which would have been this weekend last year. I hover around the same exact week for 30 some years. I don't know why Ridley doesn't call the first weekend of November the John Heffron weekend. Make it easy, because then every promo I use, I would never have to change because the date's not off by one or two, you know. But was it COVID? No, so that was full
that was
on.
Before, yeah, we were back.
Yeah, we were back, but you had to be vaxxed, I think, and then maybe even prove that you were vaxxed. I think what was kind of then.
Yeah, we took temperatures at the door for a while. That was a thing.
Did.
Well, here's what I remember you doing, and I thought this was a riot when you did this. And I don't even know if you remember. It wasn't a big deal to you. We had come back from one of the two different lockdown things we were on. And Mark Ridley said to myself, Bill, the staff, that there's a line on stage with like yellow tape and the comedian cannot cross the yellow line.
Yeah.
You would be too close to the audience if you crossed that line.
Yeah, you cross the line, and then what would happen is it was set up where then Whitmer would get a notification exactly. on her phone.
That's exactly.
And then that's how she knew people were crossing it.
Yeah.
You know, she'd get a thing. She'd send a team out. They would be standing in the corner like Lenny Bruce to see if you actually stepped over the line. Then if you stepped over the line, you would get arrested.
Well, I hope there's no legal ramifications if I mention that. You crossed that line several times that weekend.
I think I did.
I think you did.
And the lives that were lost because of it, you know, we'll never get them back. Oh, but every show is now dedicated to the 9 people that were killed each randomly throughout the night. Like, you didn't know what 9 people would die. It was kind of this weird science project. You're like, wow, the crowd looks great, but if I step over this line, 9 of them die.
Oh, man.
But, you know. Yeah, and then we did it.
Yeah, we did it, and I mean that was a crazy time. But you were all gung ho about coming back. You had no reservations.
Well, probably because that was the first comedy club that I made money at in 2 years. So I was probably really excited about coming back.
Right, there you go.
Yeah.
It's been quite a history at our club over the years, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, I've been there for, I think I'm headlining in 1989, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, could have been 90s, but I think it was still the 80s when I first started headlining that place, which is pretty, you know.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing.
Because places from then probably aren't around for the most part.
Yeah, there was a bunch in the kind of the circle of Ridley's that, you know, surprisingly they didn't make it, which was weird because they seemed like non-money laundering type of facilities. So I don't know how they just didn't make it, you know.
Yeah.
They're all places that would get robbed every other day, but whoever was robbing them knew the Safecom and, you know, all that stuff. So it was interesting.
Yeah. Well, do you miss any? Is there a stage that you miss playing just for that, the way it was set up and like you could have really good shows there and now it's gone and you're like, I wish that place was back.
Yeah, no, not Michigan, because most of my Michigan shows, I was just super young. So there are a lot of stages that were just full of fear for me. So I didn't really have fun on too many of them. I mean, there was a place in Flint called Mr. G's. If you were a young man, that, you know, there could be some benefits if you have a good show there.
Okay.
But for the most part, it was just, you know, emceeing for headliners that were kind of douchey and managers that were equally as kind of douchey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I remember hosting some clubs where you'd host, which is a tough position. The show would run late or get sat late and, you know, you'd have to do 10 minutes. Then they come up to you and go, you're only doing 7.
Yeah.
And then they come up to you and go, you're only doing 4. But during that 4, make sure you name these 4 acts that are coming. And we have chicken tenders. And if you buy a souvenir mug, so then you'd have all this info to get out in 4 minutes, and then you went on stage and you would do all the info, but do 2 extra jokes, just try to win the crowd over. And I remember getting yelled at for that.
Really?
You know, people going, well, what time did I tell you? 4? How much time did you do? I don't know, like 5.5? Yeah, well, you know, we'll dock you if that happens again. Oh. You know, only so you leave enough time for the headliner to from the 80s to get up there. Boy, I was around a lot of men at the shower and I dropped the soap. That's something you don't want to bend down, you know, so you can have time for their hacky asses. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, so, man,
it's interesting that the, the, and I know this even, and you've been in it way longer than me, but, you know, how those clubs, you know, the kind of the mob clubs went away. And the ones that were always kind of running above board, like Comedy Castle, those stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of weird how there's not that many clubs in Michigan, you know? I mean, I guess there's a few, but I only do two of the whole state.
Right.
You know, on this lower half, I've been trying to do more of the upper, upper Michigan stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's, you know, the, what was I going to ask about now? Oh yeah. Here's the thing that happens to me. And I guess I've heard the act and maybe not stuff from the current act, but whenever I'm traveling and I drive past the 12 Oaks Mall, I think of you. I think of all your stories because, you know, I'm an East Sider and I wasn't really at 12 Oaks. I was a Lakeside guy. Not that different, but it was Lakeside. It's different. Right. And I think about 12 Oaks and that's still there. Lakeside, I think they're tearing down this year, next year. Uh-huh. But do you ever visit that place? What's that like now?
I go through 12 Oaks, but they've changed it so much. Like it's not like the mall you remember.
Yeah.
You know, the food court is used to be where the movie theater is. And then when you walk into 12 Oaks, there was this big blue sculpture. Hmm. It was like two stories tall. And that was the one part of 12 Oaks when, you know, you get to the mall with your parents and then your parents would ditch you.
Yeah.
You'd be like, okay, we'll meet back in an hour and a half at the big blue thing is what right. we call it. And you just know, you just take off. I mean, and you're 9, you're 10, mm-hmm. and you're whipping through the mall all by yourself.
Yeah.
Even if you saw your parents walking or something, you wouldn't even acknowledge them. You just kind of look and you just keep going and go, no, we still have a half hour left.
Yeah.
And then you meet at your mom, you'd see your mom sitting there, you know, just sitting at the big blue thing. And she'd have all her Lord & Taylor and Hudson bags and all that stuff. And then you had to convince her, we got to go back up to KB and Toys and Hobby. There's a couple of Atari games I want to get. They're a little pricey, but you got to sign off on them, you know?
Yeah, those were the days, man.
Yeah, that was my first credit card, Lord & Taylor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. First credit card. I don't know why. I think I got a Liz Claiborne, which is pretty sure is a female brand. I got a Liz Claiborne sweater that had flowers on it. Yeah, I bought it. I thought it looked really hip. Bought a pair of Jordache jeans and an Ocean Pacific pullover.
All right.
Yeah. And I wore it day one of back at school because I was for sure I was going to sync up the best dress for the year with that combo.
Did that work out? Did you win it?
Did not work out.
Oh, no.
Did not work out. I don't even know if anybody noticed my Jordache, which I then found out from just, you know, recently that Jordache was completely a female's jeans.
Oh.
Like guys wore them, but it was not like they weren't marketed towards men.
Yeah. Interesting.
I guess now it would be okay, but like back then, but I don't remember anybody giving me that's you know, I don't remember getting too much gruff for it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm literally wearing girls' pants. I mean, they didn't let me go into the female, you know, locker room or bathroom because they say, well, I'm wearing female pants. I obviously identify as a female who wears jeans. You know, none of that happened.
No. But yeah, that was definitely the jeans you wore was a big deal. And I believe I'm still wearing basically the same jeans I've always worn my whole life.
The Husky Sears.
No, I might have had those. I don't really remember. I mean, I remember those being around. I guess I was too young to have any say in what if I was wearing those, I wouldn't have had any say. But I feel like I still go to get jeans out of that little bin, you know, the little cubicle things.
Yeah.
And I grab a pair of those and it's been that way for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, the Husky section of Sears was interesting. I always had the tough skins were tough the big skins, thing.
Right.
You know, that you wear. I don't know if they still make those, but you know, you probably, and I'm sure a comic's done a bit of this, so I don't want to step on it without even knowing what comic it is. I just think it's too obvious. But I mean, that was back when you got labeled husky just as a kid.
Right.
Like you pass by all the normal kid clothes and you go to the husky section.
Plus size boys.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's what it is, right?
That's all it was.
Yeah.
You're just husky. Yeah.
Yeah. That seems wrong now.
Yeah, you can't have that now.
No.
You had to probably got rid of that word.
Yeah, I don't know what they call it, but you got to have something, right?
And that's in the boys who favor food aisle, I believe. I think that's the section. Yeah.
That's fair. Remember that? And this is the thing. We're recording this on Halloween, if you're listening. And I was thinking of this today. Saw a lot of that this over the weekend where I think I'm of an age, and we're pretty close in age, where to me, when I got old enough, I stopped doing Halloween. And then even as like a young man going to clubs and stuff, I don't really remember too many adults dressing up for Halloween. And that's completely changed.
Yeah, it's definitely switched. Like my wife wanted to go to a Halloween party the other day, and she practiced her costume. She found wigs. She wanted to nail it. And then we were gonna go, but I kind of half-assed the costume.
Okay,
you know, so she kind of got pissed. But I mean, I thought it was good, but she didn't like it. So we ended up staying home. She just wore the outfit. And then she goes, or I could have been this person. And it was all, you know. Yeah, people like still to get dressed up. I think it's kind of, it's creepy for the kids now. Because kids now, I mean, are there Halloween police where you just walk around and you go, you're social appreciating. Whatever it means, you're not allowed to dress like an Indian. You can't be a cowboy.
Sure. Yeah.
You can't dress like anything but you.
Right. Yeah. I remember being like a hobo and we would burn cork and put that on our faces. Like nobody does that anymore. You can't do that.
Yeah, dude, you can't hobo it anymore.
Yeah, hoboing it.
You can't. Yeah. Like, I mean, protester would have been a fun.
Okay.
You know, just walk around with a bullhorn and just protesting everything.
Sure.
That would have been a fun one. I mean,
but striking UAW worker, I guess that's out of date even now. 2 days late for that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just ready for Christmas at this point. I don't even know.
Okay, well, that's,
If Halloween needs to be a thing.
Yeah, but it's such a big thing. Because I would go to bars where they'd have, like, a costume contest. But out of, like, because I remember, like, the Clutch Cargo's Halloween costume contest, right?
Clutch Cargo's,
that was, like, a club. And we went there. And there were, like, 25, 30 people out of everybody that were in costume, and they all went on stage to be in the contest, and the rest of us just dressed like regular people.
Yeah, and it was 24 girls wearing policeman outfits with thongs and stockings.
Yeah, pretty much. Know? Yeah. Let's talk about your specials, because I was watching episodes in Sunday Night in DC today. It was good stuff.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, you know, they're me. I don't, you know, there's a lot of comics that every year they go, I'm doing all new material. I'm starting from scratch. And then, you know, people pay $60 and see them. And you go, yeah, you're doing all new material, starting from scratch. But your first 6 months sucks.
Yeah.
And you just wasted all those people's money. I've never done that.
Right.
I always kind of like rotate stuff out where I'll do stuff for a while. And then it gets starts to curdle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll take it off the shelf and put new stuff in. But I also look at it for me. I'm not famous enough where I need to crank out a brand new hour every year, because people who see me on the road or people who haven't seen me in a long time, probably the Comedy Castle is the only place where I get stressed.
Mm.
I'm literally like, I get stressed out performing there because I just assume these people come back every year.
A lot of them do. I can tell you that from working there, that they've, you know, They see you. They know. I mean, there's always a big conglomerate of people who want to talk to you after the show because they went to high school with you or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the, you know, that's the only time where I'd be like, even, you know, this couple of days out where I'm like, did I talk about this last year? And, you know what I mean? I guess I'm going to do, I guess this will be the crowd work show, you know, that is so popular amongst the kids now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're good. You're good. The amount of crowd work you do is just right. I'm going to say that as a compliment.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, but now you probably see a lot more people overdoing it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you see guys and they'll do it, and it's you know, they're like Ian Bagg and Paul McCurry or some of these guys that come. They're cool, known great. For it, and people come, and it's always – like, they never have a bad time of it. They seem to make it work under, no matter what the answer is, there's a funny joke, you know?
Yeah.
And some of these other guys, they're just fishing for stuff, you know? And they reel, you know, they catch one or two. It's like, you know, you catch one or two fish and it's a bad day of fishing. And, you know,
yeah.
So it's like sometimes it's like, well, you got a couple Instagram clips out of this one. Congratulations.
Yeah.
But crowd was bored for the other 40 minutes. But
I see that a lot where guys go, I'm trying to get a clip, and it's always asked the same questions. Are you guys dating? What'd you meet?
Yeah.
What do you do for a living?
Mm-hmm.
Make joke here. Like if comics ask better questions to the people they're talking to, mm-hmm. more interesting, then they might get different stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I try to do. When I talk to crowds, I try to go, what are some of the dreams that you never accomplished? Like shit, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like shit
well,
like
sure.
that. We'll go meta. We'll go deep.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this about the specials, because the ones, you know, the things that are on YouTube, and everybody's got different ways of doing it now. But you did specials for Comedy Central, and I got to imagine they're much easier to do now. And were they more stressful back when it was just, you know, this big, sort of a bigger shoot than it is today?
Well, yeah, because back then, I mean, you know, half hour comedy specials were a big thing. And with commercials, that was only actually 20 minutes of material. So you're not even doing a half hour. You know, anybody can do 20 minutes. But the bad thing about them, if you didn't watch them at 9:30 on that particular Thursday that they put them out, you would never see that special again.
Right.
So at least now when you put it out, you know, and it goes by whatever the trend is.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did a special I tried to shoot and sell to Netflix, but they didn't take it because they only wanted Netflix production specials. Okay. Yeah. So that's why you see the same four people get Netflix specials and nobody else, because they all signed like five deals mm-hmm. with Netflix. So it's going to be the same Eliza's, the Bugatti's, it's going to be the same people. And they're cranking them out like one a year, just, you know, just to get done. But now that YouTube's a thing, you know, you can kind of sit there and you don't really make money, but at least it's there for people to see you, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, some specials are better than others. And I really think it's how well lit the special is. Like I've looked at specials that have done well, and then I've looked at specials that haven't. I'm like, it's the lighting. The darker the special, the less views they get.
Really?
Like that?
I think that's
yeah.
it. Maybe
I really do.
There's like, you think there's an algorithm to this is good video as
visual.
Well lit?
Mm. Yeah, it's like what can you watch? I mean, I watch a lot of how-to videos on just fixing dumb things. And if it's a guy on his phone holding it above his dishwasher, I'm out.
Yeah.
But if some guy somehow has three cameras on his phone and there's a diva light on it and it's super bright, like I'm going to watch that guy's.
So there you go. Okay.
So even my newest one, Sunday Night in DC, I wish that they just would have lit that thing up.
Yeah.
After the fact, I got 20 different, you know, things on my Instagram where I could change a filter and make mm-hmm. it look differently. So
yeah.
I don't even think it's that difficult, you know, to face tune me a little bit. So I don't look like I was holding a lot of weight back then. But the next one I got to just record at the Comedy Castle. There's no reason.
Yeah.
There's no reason why. you know, that shouldn't have happened.
Well, I mean, you gotta you do it when you're ready to do it. What goes into picking a venue for a special then?
In the history of my life got to pick my own venue.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
The one that goes into the next one is where I want to do it. Okay. And I don't care if it costs extra money to fly in or whatever. The problem is I'm almost ready to shoot a new one now. Mm-hmm. But I'm at the Comedy Castle this week, waiting a full year to do the material I'm doing now is going to suck.
Yeah.
You know, but I still might though, just so I can shoot it there.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fair. I mean, certainly, yeah. Everyone goes crazy. We were talking, sure, I mentioned this in the intro, which I haven't recorded yet, but tickets are going fast for this weekend, so please come on out and see one. Let me ask you this then, with five shows this weekend, if you had to say, and again, they're all good, and I'll say, because I've seen John dozens of times, I'm there for every show, when do you feel the best one typically is for you on a weekend like this?
I like the Thursday one because that one is actually the lightest probably of the week.
Okay, yeah.
Friday first show, Saturday second show is pretty nice because you can just go out there and rip it. I'm starting to be anti second show Fridays. I just don't, and the people who bought tickets for those don't think I'm still gonna have a good show. But I even say this in my act. We don't need to be up that late on a Friday. It's pointless. Nobody needs to be finishing up their night around 11:30 or 12. No. We should, you know, I'd rather do a 3 o'clock show on a Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Than that 10 o'clock show.
So you have the matinee.
Have the matinee and then the two other shows. That's what I might push for next time.
Next time there's going to be a Saturday matinee, but not this time.
Not this time, but I'm going to work on it.
it's a possibility.
It makes more sense, man. Give the younger guy that. You probably got 8 billion funny Detroit young guys that would kill them a Friday night at the castle.
Probably. You know? You're not wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can make that work.
So I'll make room for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that'll work. And if you want to be at home before it's dark, you come to that matinee.
Yes. Knock out. You're indoors there. You can't tell if it's light or dark out anyway.
If you don't want to drive home in the dark or you're worried about, I don't know, getting hit by a drunk driver, then that matinee's perfect.
It's exactly perfect. So call all the Friday night people right now and move, see if you can move.
All right. I don't know that that's going to be possible this time. Maybe next time. We'll get the early show going. I mean, Dave Dyer, I'm talking to him last week, and he goes, why don't we have pancakes for sale at the comedy club? And I'm like, well, why not do the show at 10 a.m.? I don't know.
I've done shows that early.
Have you?
Yeah.
Like a corporate show or a real club show?
A corporate show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it's weird for a second, and then if people are into it, then, I mean, I go back to my old school doing morning radio. You did funny stuff, or what you thought was funny, at 6:30 in the morning. You had to do jokes and be up and laugh, and, you know, people laugh in the morning in their cars on the way to work, so there's no wrong time for laughter, just 11:15 at Friday night's the wrong time.
There's one wrong time, and it's the end Friday.
Yeah, and it's from 10:30 to midnight. That's the wrong time.
Well, our show's at 9:45 on Friday, so I think it's the headliner that suffers, though, then. The openers the openers are in a good time, but the headliner is still too late.
Yeah. If you come and see me, I might be long-winded on all the other shows. It's that show where you're going to see me land the missile exactly at the time I'm supposed to be getting off.
I came up with a solution. This is a thing we can implement this weekend. You sign off on it. I'll bring it up to Mr. Ridley. How's this sound? Listen to this.
Okay.
Late show Friday, you go on first.
Yeah.
Like you go on first, you're done, then we bring out the openers for anyone that wants to stick around.
We'll go backwards.
We'll go backwards.
Yeah.
For the late
show. We'll go backwards. Yeah. Yeah, I'll host. I'll do some weird thing. I'll do like 10 minutes up front, and then I'll bring up the feature. I'll do another 10, and then I'm out.
And you're out. Okay.
And then we see how good this MC is. You know what I mean?
He's got to work the check drop that MC.
Yeah.
He's got to do.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
And we've got Robin Giller in emceeing, I think, this weekend. So she's going to have to deal with that.
All right. Well, Robin, by fire.
Time to shine, yep. Robin. You're closing Friday night.
Better get that closer bit done. You better figure out how to your merch sooner in your set. Yeah.
Come up with a song to sing over the check drop or whatever it is you do.
Yep.
Do you have, this will be the last thing we'll go on this. Do you have a check drop bit? Was there anything that you sat down one day and said, I'm going to write this bit and it's just for the check drop?
I don't remember if I had a bit. I remember like stopping. Stopping when all the checks came out with just somebody. Like, I always remember having to stop and say something or, you know, about the font of the check. But it's weird with technology now. You know, at some clubs, you don't even notice it happening.
Okay.
You know, because now, you know, everybody has their little POS systems.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes things different than the old days.
Yeah.
You know, but you still, you know, most comedy clubs now, you would work a comedy club and it'd be the same waitress, the same server for almost your entire existence, like working there, right? You never saw anyone new. But now it seems like comedy clubs turn over staff faster than they used to.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily always get, not talking your clubs, but at other ones, you don't also always get the best trained comedy club server. So you can be on stage and you can hear, who had the chicken wings? Like, you hear that from the stage, you know, or you hear when they're going back and they play cornhole with the bottles of beer because they're throwing it across the room trying to break them. So, but it's a thing.
It's a thing.
But my shows aren't like that. My shows are friendly. They're polite. People come and laugh. We don't talk political stuff. We're not overly dirty. It's just a good escape from this world that we're living in right now. And then you go off and you get home.
That's the best. Well, John, thanks so much for talking. I'm really looking forward to this weekend. It's always a highlight of the year. John Heffron Weekend.
Yeah.
That's what we're calling it.
The John Heffron Weekend. Yeah. And then I don't know, to sell more tickets to those guys spinning arrows. Is that still a viable marketing?
I don't know that we're doing that, but we could do that. Sure.
Okay.
I mean, you know.
Well, I'll see how the feature is, and that's my move. If the feature is like okay, I'll be like, all right, dude. Before the show tomorrow, you're spinning arrows.
Well, I mean, it's a possibility that I don't even know who is our feature this weekend. I'm gonna see who it is and see if they're good. Ed Bell, is Edward Bell somebody you know? I don't know Edward Bell.
I don't know Edward Bell, so we'll get him and he'll fall in line.
Edward, we'll get him. Start practicing spinning that sign, buddy.
Right.
All right, Chad.
All right, dude.
I'll see you this weekend, man.
I'll talk to you, Chad.
Later. There he goes. He literally hung up like that. That's okay. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it was. I mean, what can you say, John Heffron? Always funny, right? Always funny, John Heffron. Love that guy. Looking forward to seeing what he does this weekend. It's always entertaining. Of course, life events like moving may show up in the show this week, I have a feeling. So get tickets to come out and see John. It usually sells very well. I'm not sure where we are on sellouts. Saturday usually is the first one that goes. So the early show Saturday will be the first one that goes if you're looking for tickets. But ComedyCastle.com to get your tickets for John. It should be a good time. Shelley Smith is one of the openers this week. Shelly's a lady I've known for a long time. It's very funny. And Vikram Pandya is going to be with us. Vic Pandya, he's been here before. We like Vic. So it should be a fun weekend. And, of course, Tim Finkel, thank you for joining us. Really honored to have the chance to speak to you in the face of really an unspeakable tragedy. And just so touching, that story, Ryder's life, as short as it was, touched more people than most of us will ever
have the pleasure of doing. So, Ryder Finkel, rest in peace. We'll be thinking about you at your at your memorial service coming up here in a little bit. And again, thanks to you guys for listening to this, ComedyCastle.com. I know it's we try to be fun. It's comedians being funny. But when real life happens, so we cover that too, because John is a part of our Comedy Castle family, and we love him so much and his family as well. So let's just get out of here. I got nothing else to say. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. Catch us at the club this week with John Heffron and Christopher Titus. All right. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you.